This is WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, and we're unpacking the mental health portion of the state's recently adopted budget. And to do that, we're joined by Dr. Ann Sullivan, the Commissioner for the State Office of Mental Health. Welcome back to the show, Commissioner.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So for starters, what do you see as some of the highlights of this year's budget as it pertains to spending on mental health?
Well, there's a couple of big highlights. One is for kids, for youth. There's $20 million to support school-based clinics across the state. School-based clinics are particularly important because it helps to be able to actually work with kids right where they are and be able to help them while they're in school, work with their teachers, work with the families, et cetera. So that's a big initiative of the governor's, to have a school-based clinic in any school that wants it. That's number one. Also, we've increased in this year's budget some of the intensive services for youth, such as youth ACT teams, which are assertive community treatment teams, which are wraparound services in the community for youth that have the highest needs. And so it's great to have an increase in that. And then there's also dollars for youth to talk to each other and to help each other. And that's youth mental health first aid, that where teens can learn how to talk to their fellow teens about their problems. So we learned when we did a listening tour across the state that one of the things that youth wanted to do was be able to help each other. So that's some dollars there to also spread those kinds of programs in the schools. And then another big highlight is in the criminal justice sector. This was something which wasn't highlighted as much in last year's big budget, but this provides dollars to help individuals get diverted from going into jails and prisons, from diversion from incarceration. So there is about $33 million that's being invested. And of that $33 million, about $8 million is for navigators in the courts to help individuals get the services they need if they have a mental illness and they hit the court system. There's also an expansion of mental health courts. That's in the public safety budget. And there's also an expansion of forensic teams that will wrap services around high needs individuals. And that's in that $33 million as well. Also some dollars to work with overseeing in certain communities the connections between law enforcement and mental health to be able to keep in touch with clients as they go through the different systems. So it's a real investment in helping individuals not sift into the criminal justice system. And if they should hit the courts, then have the ability to get the services they need. And I'd just like to highlight one more thing, the insurance coverage in this budget. Basically, it's our licensed clinics. Commercial payers, by and large, for 80% of our licensed clinics were paying below the Medicaid rate. What was passed in this budget is that they have to at least pay the Medicaid rate. Now, what does that mean? That means access for individuals who have commercial insurance, who sometimes have trouble finding services, finding psychiatrists or therapists. They can now more easily access our clinics because our clinics will be being paid the way they should be for seeing those individuals. The other thing was three regulations which will be effective, I believe it's January of 2025, that will require three things of insurers. One, that they can give an appointment within 10 days for mental health, and if they can't, then they will have to go out of network without any increased cost to the client, any increased cost to the consumer. And they also have to update their directories and make sure that those directories are current. So those kinds of provisions are also very exciting because they help to ensure access to care for individuals insured by both Medicaid and by commercial insurance.
So there's a lot to unpack there. And let's start with the last thing first. And these current registries is an issue that has been covered in the media. And I'm curious what you see as the enforcement mechanism for something like this new requirement. Is that going to fall to OMH? Is this a Department of Financial Services responsibility? And for whoever it lands on, how regularly and how vigorously should they enforce this?
Well, it definitely has to be enforced. And it will fall to the Department of Financial Services, and they are going to be able to have additional staff to enforce the new rules. We've learned this over the years with parity legislation, which was focused on making sure that there was equal payment for medical and mental health services, that without enforcement, often these things are not, some insurers do, but not all insurers do. So enforcement is critical, and that will fall to DFS, and DFS has the authority to do, I'm not sure what the exact structure might be for fines, but DFS knows that, but they can definitely enforce.
Well, rewinding to the money for school-based clinics, you made a comment about any school that wants one having one. Would they need to put in some of their own funding as well, or is there an expectation that the state dollars will cover these costs?
So far, as we've been opening up the school-based clinics, you give startup dollars. So there's $25,000 for startup for a school, for some schools, and $45,000 for others, depending upon the need of the school. So they don't really have to put up money, very, very little, that from the school. And basically, we cover that. What happens is that the community provider bills for the services in the schools. Now, last year, we got a significant increase in the rate for school-based. And we also got in the legislation that not just Medicaid, but commercial payers had to pay for school-based services. So that really makes these clinics viable from an insurance perspective. So the dollars that we give are really startup funds. And startup funds help, with space, et cetera. And for a school that's doing pretty well, $25,000 was fine. We increased it to $45,000 for some schools that need a little more help, often with just setting up the room, getting things together, where the person would be, some of the tele. But between those two dollar amounts, the schools really don't have to contribute anything. The provider in the community then bills and basically supports the services.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the recently adopted state budget with Office of Mental Health Commissioner Ann Sullivan. When it comes to these clinics, are you envisioning these as something that are run and overseen by local nonprofits in an area, or is there a future where the services are provided by staff employed by the school districts? I mean, are you agnostic about the model there?
Well, the model that we're putting out is that it would be run by the not-for-profits, and the reason is that it's a really good connection for the services that families and youth may need in addition to what they get in the schools. You get past that issue of having to now refer out, that basically you have this very nice connection between a really solid community-based provider that provides the whole range of clinical services for youth and families in the school. Now, there are schools and there are dollars from other sources that pay for the school paying for example, social workers. But the model, this particular model, is a not-for-profit having a financially reimbursable by insurance clinic located in the school.
Well, I want to turn to workforce more broadly and the funding to retain direct providers of care at nonprofits that contract with your office. The final budget includes a 2.8% cost of living adjustment, but does not include the requested injection of hundreds of millions of dollars to raise the floor of wages. So, what do you see as the potential benefit of the cost of living increase that was approved in the final budget?
It's significant. This is the third year now of a significant COLA. There was a 5% to 4%, and now there's this 2.84%. So there's a cumulative effect after decades of very low to no COLAs at all. These last 3 years have been significant. I think it will have an impact. We're also doing some other things which has been shown to start having an impact as well. One is big one is a loan repayment program. And this included in actually in this year's budget, there is $4 million additional for the loan repayments for individuals working with youth. But that first $10, $9 million that we put out last year for loan forgiveness for psychiatrists and nurse practitioners, for example, has already brought in about 250 individuals into the field. When you give them a loan forgiveness, they then have to work with you for 3 years. So that brings increased number of individuals coming in because they get loan forgiveness. Also, there's an additional dollars for loan forgiveness for social workers and psychologists and certified mental health counselors. Those dollars, we've had more applications for than we have actually dollars. So we're really very excited about that. And those dollars are coming out very soon. And we think that will again put several hundred individuals into the workforce. So continuing programs like that, I think, also are additional ways to entice people. And hopefully, if they come and work with us, and we can continue to, keep them excited and involved in the work, that they will then stay with us even after the loan forgiveness period. So there's different incentives we're trying to utilize to get people involved and increase the workforce.
Well, sticking with the COLA for one last question, we recently talked with Ji-hoon Kim, who you worked with in the Hochul administration, and he raised concerns about the speed at which the cost of living funding will flow, given what he described as bureaucratic hurdles in the past. So for OMH specifically, is there anything you can do to expedite the distribution of those dollars, or is the pace contingent on the middlemen that stand between the state and the people at the end waiting for the cost of living increase?
We're trying to move all these dollars as quickly as possible. I mean, I know that sometimes this doesn't feel as quick as the providers want, but we definitely work and try as hard as possible to get all the paperwork in, get everything done so that we can get the dollars out there. Our not-for-profits don't have large margins, so we know that it's important to get the dollars out as quickly as possible, and we work with that. So I think we're going to try. We're going to try to help move the dollars as quickly as possible.
But is there anything that can be done differently, or do we just need to work within the existing confines?
I'm not really sure if I can answer whether there's anything specific that could speed it up. There was some concern in this budget because there's a request, not a request, it's in the legislation, that basically there be a, of the COLA, that 1.7% of that COLA has to go to salaries for individuals, direct care service individuals. And I know there's concern about how that might slow things down. And we're looking at, I know my guys are looking at ways to try to figure out how to help providers do that in a way that would make it as expeditious as possible. I know there is some concern about that, but it's in the legislation and it's what is expected. So I think we're trying to figure out ways with them that can make that as easy as possible.
Well, coming back to the needs of the mental health of children, the governor, one of her big proposals this year was language restricting social media access for minors, essentially curtailing their ability to be proactively fed content for hours on end, which she argued was detrimental to their mental health. That language didn't make it into the adopted budget. It might resurface in the final weeks of the legislative session. But I'm curious, as someone who spends a lot of time in the mental health space, how big of a difference could something like that make in the health outcomes for children? Did you think that this would be a significant improvement in the lives of minors if it was adopted?
The research on this kind of thing is not that robust at this point in time. However, when we spoke with the youth, I had several dialogues with them across the state. One of the things that they did bring up was the algorithms and the fact that they get all the negativity that flows versus why don't they give us some more positive algorithms? That's what some of them said. So I think among the youth themselves, there's definitely an awareness that some things are going on here which aren't that helpful for them or for others. So when you hear it from them, it makes you think, well, maybe, this really can be really important. And I do think it's important that parents have some control over what is being fed to their kids on these algorithms. And so, yes, I do think that it could have an impact. I don't know that the research is in yet on how devastating some things can be in social media, but also how helpful some things can be in social media. So I think that there's still a little bit mixed, but I do think It would be helpful to have some safeguards around what youth are being exposed to. And some of the youth said that they thought that that would be good too.
Are you a big TikTok user, Commissioner?
No.
Now, you prefer Instagram? You do that, the doom scrolling on Sunday night because you get the Sunday
Yeah, a little
scaries?
bit of Instagram and sadly some Facebook, some of us who have been, but I'm not a TikTok person, no.
Well, finally, we talked a little bit about the criminal justice side of things. And one of the programs that maybe doesn't get as much attention is the INSET model and sort of the voluntary approach to, say, Kendra's law. And I'm curious what you think about the state commitment in this year's budget for that program.
INSET is a very valuable program, and I think it does it does great work. I think I also think that there is a need for assisted outpatient treatment. I know that that's still controversial among some of the advocates, but I do think some clients really do need that. But INSET offers certainly an opportunity for some individuals with very serious mental illness to have an approach that really works for them, which is someone who a peer, someone who's been through the life experience they've been through, and who then can help guide them on their path to recovery. And I think that that's incredibly important for many, many individuals. But I still think that there can be a place at times for the use of something like AOT. But INSET, yes, very valuable. And actually, in last year's budget, the governor had funded four teams for INSET, and we actually had funded where we had contributed to some of the initial funding. And believe we have an evaluation going on too to look at it so that we could consider it to be a best practice.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this conversation. We've been speaking with Dr. Ann Sullivan. She's the commissioner for the State Office of Mental Health. Commissioner, thank you so much for making the time and congrats on, I think, 10 years in office. Is that correct at this point?
Yes.
Well, congrats on the milestone.
Yes, well, it's yes, and it's been these last several years with these last couple of years with Governor Hochul have just been terrific because the investment and commitment to mental health is just historic. It truly is.
That's something, yeah, we hear from a lot of people in this space, both inside and outside the administration. So I'm almost starting to believe that it's true and not just hype.
It's true. It's true. And that $1 billion from last year? All of that $1 billion is we've got it all out in RFPs, and we're beginning to award some of the dollars. So it's real. It's real. And I think it'll take a little time for some of that to appear, but it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I've never seen this kind of investment, and I've been around a long time.
Well, thanks again, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you.
And for more Capital Pressroom content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.